Namandavits, 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 namandavits. 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 Please join me in Gassho. Gassho, on the issues. Such is the benevolence of Amida's great compassion that we must strive to return it even to the breaking of our bodies. Such is the benevolence of the masters and true teachers that we must endeavor to repay it even to our bones becoming dust. 如来大悲の音読は、身を粉にしても頬ずべし、死守知識の音読も、骨を砕きても射すべしと。南蛮大仏、南蛮大仏、南蛮大仏、南蛮大仏、南蛮大仏、南蛮。Okay, good morning, everyone. Oh, it's very nice to see so many smiling faces. Yeah, it's great to come together in this way. As the autumn seasons arrive, I feel like fall is here. It's cooling off, right? The temperatures are changing. And in the poetry and the arts of Japan, we often hear that the autumn of our lives is something that, this is not just in Japan, but throughout the world, the sense of the autumn is the time, you know, we've sort of come through the summer and the vibrancy, and we're entering into, you know, coming towards the end of the year, coming to the later chapters of our lives. And so it's fitting that this morning we're exploring this topic of aging. This is one of the four main kinds of suffering that the Buddha identified. He spoke about life as being unavoidably, we face suffering through birth, through aging, through illness, and through death. And then there are an additional four that we will talk about in greater depth as we move on: the separation from loved ones, being together with things and people that we dislike, not getting what we want, and this continuing existence of suffering. But for now, we're focusing on these first four, and today we'll talk specifically about aging. And the Buddha teaches us that aging is an unavoidable part of life. This seems obvious, right? And each year we have a birthday, each day, each year, day by day, we age and we become a little bit older, right? Or we proceed through our lives. So we think, yeah, this is an obvious truth. But do we always live and understand this truth in our moment-to-moment existence, right? So let's think for a moment about what it means to age. Right? What is it to grow older, right? Our bodies change when we're young, when we're small. Our bodies are getting bigger, right? They're getting taller. As we get older, maybe our bodies are getting bigger this way, right? Or maybe sometimes, you know, we start as we get older, maybe we're not as tall as we once were. We're not able to stand up quite as straight, right? So our bodies age. Maybe we don't have the energy or the strength to do the things that we used to do when we were younger, right? Not just our bodies, but our minds change too. As we age, we learn, we gain experience. In some cases, we understand things that we didn't understand when we were younger. In other times, we forget things that we used to be able to remember when we're younger, right? So our bodies change and our minds change, right? And these changes in and of themselves, the Buddha teaches us, are neither good nor bad. They're neither good nor bad. They are. It is what it is. It's our own preferences that make them good or make them bad. When we're younger, this growing, this aging is exciting, right? I've gotten stronger. Now I can do things I didn't get to do before, right? As we get older, we start to slow down, right? And so what this process of aging that was once a happy and appreciated thing now becomes something that's a little bit disappointing from time to time, right? So this, the Buddha teaches that suffering, this first noble truth, is called the truth of suffering in many English translations. And the second noble truth is that the suffering arises from our clinging. So why is aging suffering? Because we have an idea of me and mine, who I am, what I can do, right? What my life is. And when that changes in a way we don't like, then we get disappointed and frustrated, right? And so as we go through life, right, how are our understanding, how is our way of looking at life expressed, right? And so in Buddhism, we say that our way of being in the world is made up of three different parts. We call these the three kinds of karma, right? There is our actions, our words, and what we think. So our actions, words, and our thoughts. These are the three kinds of karma. These are the three kinds of things we do to express our life, right? So let's start with thinking. So what comes to you when you think about aging and getting older? What do you think? I see some of the children are smiling. I see some of the grown-ups are not smiling quite as much, right? Sometimes for me, when I think about aging, I think about maybe regret and things that I wish I had done or things that I could do when I was younger that are no longer a part of my life, right? We live in a world, especially here where we live, here in the United States, here in California, here in the Bay Area. We live in a world that worships youth, right? Celebrates accomplishment at a young age. You know, the CEOs of the tech startups that are a millionaire before they're 30, right? We celebrate the accomplishments of a young age, right? I read the other day, I was reading the newspaper, it said that 40 is the new 90. 40 is the new 90, right? And the meaning behind that is that, you know, anything that is done in middle age, any accomplishments in middle age and beyond, right, are not significant. That all significant accomplishments are done by people who are in their young age, right? And so what a strange way to me to look at this world. And now I'm over 40, I'm 43, so I'm in that age group now. You know, I'm not a young man anymore. And as we age, we find ourselves doing things that we may not have imagined we would ever do in our lives as we're younger. One of these experiences for me, something I never thought about doing when I was a kid, was going to parent nights at school. It's a big part of your life when you have kids, is you go to these parent nights for your school. And I remember one of the first ones I went to when my oldest son, Yoma, was starting preschool. This was at the Shoreview Recreation Center in San Mateo. So I went in and a bunch of other parents who are around my age, you know, late 30s, early 40s, and we were there and we learned all about what preschool was like. Some people had already had kids in preschool, so they had really specific questions. Other people were kind of wondering, well, what's this whole world all about? And so I came out of that kind of thinking like, wow, okay, this is my life now. Right? And as I walked out of the Shoreview Recreation Center here in San Mateo, if you've ever been there, right next to it, there's a skate park. And as I walked out, I saw the skate park and I thought, wow, you know, and all of a sudden I remembered my youth when I was in my early teens, how I loved to skateboard. And I saw these young people skateboarding and I thought back to that joy of my youth. I thought, oh man, I haven't ridden a skateboard for over 20 years, right? More than that. Wow, that looks like fun. And then I saw something that changed my whole way of thinking. I saw a man who was balding and a little paunchy, and he looked like me, and he was on a skateboard, and he was keeping up with the young guys, with these, you know, guys who are in middle school and high school, you know, doing the amazing jumps and the tricks and the kick flips. And I thought, wow, you know, it's possible. it's possible for somebody who's my age to do those things I enjoyed doing when I was young. So you know what I did? I went out and I bought this. I bought a skateboard. Yeah. I went into a skate shop. It was so fun. I hadn't been in one for years. And I thought, wow, you know, there's the smell of urethane and plywood, you know, and brand new t-shirts. And I thought, wow, this is, it brought back memories. I got into the skateboard shop and I stepped onto the skateboard and whoop, and immediately it like slipped up from under my feet. I was like, oh, it's like, but I got to buy it, right? So I bought it. Now that I'm a grown up, I can afford to buy it, right? So I bought this skateboard. And what I would do was when Yomo was in preschool, I would go to the skate park after I dropped him off from preschool sometimes. And there was no one there. You know, it's like 9 a.m. All the other parents had left. So I was all by myself and I could go and I could ride my skateboard and rediscover the joys of my youth, right, on this skateboard. But I also, you know, as I was doing it, I was trying to remember all the tricks that I could do when I was 12 years old, 13 years old, and I was trying to do them, you know, make the skateboard flip and jump and do all of these things, and I was trying to do these tricks, and you know what happened? My knees started to hurt. My knees really started to hurt. But I thought, oh, you know, I can do it. I can do these things I could do as a young man. And not even as a young man, as a teenager, right, as a kid. And so I started to do these things. And one day I was at the Beresford Skate Park over another place where I would drop my kids off for preschool and then go skateboarding. And all of a sudden I felt this pulling in my knee and it really hurt. And it kept hurting for a couple of days. In a couple of weeks. And eventually I felt that my knee was locking up. It would lock up, it would bend and it wouldn't unlock. And I thought, ooh, I better go see the doctor. So with some embarrassment, I went to see my doctor and he said, yeah, this is serious. We should get you an MRI. So a couple of days later, I had an MRI and I discovered that I had torn the meniscus in my knee, right? So if you know about knees, right, the meniscus is kind of what one of the important kind of ligaments that is shaped like the moon. So it sort of holds your knee together. So I torn my meniscus. And they said, okay, well, the specialist looked at the MRI and says, we could operate, we could give you surgery, or you could try physical therapy. And so I thought, oh, I want to try to avoid having surgery. So I spent the next, you know, 6 months going to physical therapy, working hard. I put my skateboard away, right? And I started to gradually get better. And now I'm okay, right? But at the time, I was in a lot of pain. I was in a lot of pain. And I had caused this pain myself by clinging to my idea of who I am, what I can and cannot do. Right? Now, it's not the case that a 43-year-old can't shred, right? A 43-year-old can still do all of these things. There are very famous professional skateboarders like Tony Hawk and Rodney Mullen who are in their 50s and still skate as well as teenagers, right? But they've been doing it their whole life, right? And they've taken care of their bodies in a way that I have not, right? So as the result of what I have and have not done, I am in this situation. If I can accept it and say, this is my life, if I were to say, okay, my goal is to be able to skate like I could when I was 13. I may never be able to do it, but I could get much closer. If I started working out and strengthening my legs and strengthening my knees, it would be possible, right? But that would first require me to recognize my life as it is, right? Which is very difficult for me to do, right? So my thoughts thinking, oh, I can do what I could do back then without recognizing all of the changes that have taken place. And so then I act and I do things, right? I do things that cause pain and difficulty for myself, inconvenience for others, right? And there are great possibilities also if we recognize what we can do, but also see that our situations don't need to be limitations. We can understand the situation and then move forward, right? So understanding the flow of impermanence is the way of living with wisdom as we age, right? And so then our words, right? How do we say? You know, man, when my knee hurt, I was complaining to all my friends. Complaining, oh, my knees hurt so badly. Oh, you know, I remember the good old days when I was a kid. And around that time, I got a text message from a friend, a good friend from college who I had lived in Taiwan with after college. His name's Rich. We went and we spent a year working in Taiwan. And he texted me and said, oh, I'm back in Taipei. You know, remember the good old days when we were in our early 20s and we both lived here right out of college, all the fun things we used to do. He says, well, I'm sad to report that things have changed. And he started listing off the places and the things we used to do that were gone. He said, the dinosaur pub where we used to go and eat dinner at 10 o'clock after we got off work as English teachers, right? Closed, right? The Roxy Dance Club that blared 1990s era techno music, right? Closed, right? The discount movie theater that used to show triple features of second run movies for $3, right? That place is gone. It's like one more thing is gone, Henry. Your youth. Face it, we're old, right? And so, you know, and this, you know, oh, but it's true. It was, you know, sort of like there was a kind of truth to it, right? And so how did I feel in that moment? I wanted to cry. I was so, you know, crestfallen. It was true. I was so disappointed. Right? This is the way that I deal with aging when I think about me and mine. Right? But there's another way to age. And we see this other possibility in the wise teachers of the Buddhist tradition, those who live in the Nembutsu and who are able to experience this process of aging with the wisdom and the flow, the acceptance of the truth and reality as it is. So these people who live in the Nembutsu, they see what is truly important in life. They recognize that the most important matter is to break free from this cycle of suffering that the Buddha describes. How do we break free? We let go of clinging on to me and mine. How do we come free of that? We awaken to the truth. How do we awaken to the truth? We follow the path of the Dharma, the Eightfold Path, the Six Paramitas, the wise teachings of the Nembutsu. Right? So Denyo Shonin is one of our heroes in this tradition. And he lived a full life. In his days, he lived a long and rich life. Right? He lived into his 80s. In those days, that was an incredibly, incredibly long life that he lived, right? And so Denyo Shonin, he composed a letter describing his life and the insights. He wrote many letters, but there's one in particular that he wrote that I wanted to share a portion with you today, because it really speaks to this matter of aging and how we live and flow within the impermanence of our lives. I invite you to join me in Gassho as these words are profound and filled with the truth of the Buddha's wisdom. Denyo writes, as fall and spring slip away, the months and years go by. Yesterday is spent, and today draws to a close. Little did I know that I would grow old before I was aware of it, with the unnoticed passage of the years. Yet, on occasion during that time, I must have known the beauty of flowers and birds, the wind and the moon. I must have met with the joy and sorrow of pleasure and pain. But now there is not even a single instance that I remember in particular. How sad it is to have grown gray with age, having done no more than pass the days and nights to no purpose. But when I deeply reflect on the apparent soundness of my own existence, not yet having been called away by the relentless wind of impermanence, it seems like a dream, like an illusion. As for now, there is nothing left but to aspire to the one way of getting out of birth and death. And so, when I hear that it is Amida's, Tathagata's primal vow that readily saves sentient beings like ourselves in this evil future age, I feel truly confident and thankful. Namam Babats, Namam Babats, Namam Babats, Namam Babats. So think about these words. Daniel contrasts his own sense of how little he feels he has accomplished in his own life. He has a deep awareness of his own limitations. And yet the largest thing in his mind, his most profound thoughts, are not about himself, but of the Buddha. He recognizes, I have accomplished little with this time in the world, and yet the Buddha has accomplished everything that needs to be done. Because he says, Amida Tathagata's primal vow readily saves sentient beings. So the Buddha provides our way out of birth and death. The primal vow is the Buddha's promise that in these words, Namu Amida Butsu, we will be carried over to the other shore. We will realize awakening, that we will be freed from these eight kinds of suffering. Right? So Daniel lives with deep appreciation for this life he has lived when he has been able to hear the Dharma. Right? There are many others who've been inspired by this teaching. One of my favorites is Genza. Genza is what's called a Myokonin, a marvelous person of the Nembutsu. And Genza, as he aged, at one point he looked at his hands, and he marveled with them. Because Genza was a strong farmer. He worked hard, and he continued to use his hands well into his senior years. When most of us would be retired and enjoying a life of leisure, Genza continued to work hard, using his hands, working hard. And he looked at his hands one day, and he said, wow, these hands, this gift that I have received from my parents, all these years, they continue to work and to work well, and they don't need to be sharpened or repaired. He was a farmer, right? So he would use the hoe of his farming tools, and they would wear out. He would have to constantly sharpen them so that they would be able to cut through the hard earth or, cut through the branches, cut through the rice stalks. And he knew that most tools needed to be maintained constantly. And yet his hands, he just continued to use them. And they never required to be sharpened. Right? So he had this way of looking at his life with deep gratitude, to appreciate these things that the rest of us take for granted. Renyo also had this way of living and this way of using his hands. Renyo was not a farmer, he was a teacher. But even in his late years, as a very elderly man, he would travel throughout Japan and he would write Namu Amida Butsu on a large piece of paper and share it with people so that they would be able to put it up in their house or in their local temple and to conduct a service and to focus their minds on the Nembutsu, the Buddha's wisdom and compassion. There's a record from Renyo's life. It's collected in a text called the Ichidaiki no Kikigaki. And it said that Renyo had a candle lit late at night. He was painting, writing the words, Namu Amida Butsu. He said, although I'm an old man, unable to keep my hands steady and with my eyes dimmed. Since the man who requested this scroll is leaving for Echu, present-day Fukui province, tomorrow, I am painting one now. Despite the toil involved, he added, I would not mind giving myself up for the sake of my fellow believers. I wish to see them acquire Shinjin without much trouble. This is my only wish. So Daniel wishes to share this peace of mind and joy he finds in the Dharma. So even though he can't hold his hand steady anymore because of age and he can't see as well as he used to, he still continues to work and to care for others. In the same way, Genza, as he aged, continued to care for the people around him. In those days, they didn't have movies and, they didn't have dance clubs and things like that. But people would go to watch plays. They would go to watch sumo matches. But Genza, he never cared much for these activities. He would send his family members to go. He said, go out and enjoy yourself. Go enjoy the show. He would, rather do other things. And said there were three things that Genza loved to do, the things he enjoyed to do in his old age. One was to carry other people's luggage. If you saw someone traveling through town carrying a heavy package or a heavy bag or, you know, heavy bundle, he would ask, may I carry that for you? Here, just let me carry that for you. He would take it from them and he would carry it, right, for some distance. He enjoyed carrying other people's bundles, right? He also enjoyed giving people back rubs and massaging people's shoulders. He saw someone who looked like out working on the farm and their muscles were sore. He would love to give them a massage, right? To help to relieve their tension. And he would love to do what's called moxibustion or okyu in Japanese. If you're familiar with traditional Chinese medicine that's practiced in Japan, there are little medicinal herbs that are placed on a little, kind of like a little plate and burned on the surface of the skin. It's sort of like acupuncture. It gives people relaxation. So we think about Genza, what he enjoyed doing in his old age was to lighten the burden of others, to make other people feel better, to give them a moment of relief from this suffering, these difficulties that run through our lives. And so Genza, like Daniel, he had this deep appreciation for the Buddha's compassion, the wisdom of the Buddha that guided him and supported him in his life. And so even as he aged, even as he started to perhaps slow down in some ways, continued to care for others and find his greatest joy caring for others. And what we find is that as we gain an experience in wisdom, we come to a more deep appreciation of how we may truly help others. I think in truth, it's actually a rare person who's able to awaken this heart of kindness at a young age. Some are able to do it. But for many of us, and for myself, I find that it is as I age that I begin to truly understand what a precious gift this life is and begin to see my own way of living, how it causes difficulties for others, and how I might live differently to practice kindness for others. So this is the light that's illuminated by the wisdom of the Buddha. It's often likened to a grain of rice. For those of you who remember when we used to do our rice project here at the temple, when the rice first grows up, it stands straight up, nice and proud, young and strong. And then as it matures, it starts to sort of hang down, right, with the weight of the rice stalks. And that's often said that as people age, those who become filled with wisdom and experience, they begin to bow down with humility, right? And so we can look to those who have lived with experience and shown us that aging, understood from the perspective of the Nembutsu and the Buddha Dharma, is neither good nor bad, but provides precious opportunities for kindness, for understanding, and for treasuring this life that we live. And so I'll conclude by returning to this poem that I read at the start of my talk, written by Shinran Shonin when he himself was in his 80s, and expresses Shinran's feeling of gratitude and appreciation to the Buddha and all the wise teachers who have come before. This is called the Ondokusan. It's a familiar song we sing that we often join our gathas for our Buddhist services. And we sing it because it expresses this profound gratitude and this wisdom of one who has lived many years in the Nembutsu, as Shinran Shonin did. So at this time, I invite you to join me in Gassho. Let us once again hear these words of Shinran Shonin. Such is the benevolence of Amida's great compassion that we must strive to return it, even to the breaking of our bodies. Such is the benevolence of the masters and true teachers that we must endeavor to repay it, even to our bones becoming dust. Nyōrai daihi no ondoku wa mi o konishite mo hozu beshi. Shishu chishiki no ondoku wa hone o kudakite mo shasu beshi. Namo Amida Butsu, Namo Amida Butsu, Namo Amida Butsu, Namanda Butsu, Namanda Butsu, Namanda Butsu, Namanda Butsu, Namanda Butsu.